Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
So this is movie podcast number 2 for Where Did the Road Go? And joining me is Tom Lowe. You know what? Why don't you say your last name so I don't mess it up?
No problem, Soraya. My name's Tom Lowe.
Okay. All right. That's much easier than what I was going to say.
Well, we always make it harder on ourselves, don't we?
Now, I actually got in contact. You got in contact with me because you were a fan particularly of the series on UFO history that we were doing.
Exactly. I was absolutely I'm going to embarrass you a little bit. I was absolutely blown away by that series and recommended it to all my friends. And I've listened to each episode about 4 times because I just I think it's a really intelligent conversation with a lot of critical thinking that you don't hear in the field or when people are talking about, you know, the subject. It's just it was really refreshing and also challenging. There was some stuff there that you know, took me to places. You know, I started looking things up. And I had read Valet in the early 90s, and it was a huge influence on me. And the ties between folklore and witnessing. And that had always fascinated me. And to hear, you know, 2 decades later, essentially, a really intelligent discussion about that is incredibly gratifying when, you know, like the TV universe is filled with what it's filled with currently, you know, right. Project Blue Book and things like that, you know, the shows that are basically, you know, hyped recreations.
Yeah, lots of hype, lots of dumbing down the subject.
Exactly. And actually a lot of changing of stories as both Gullius and Mike Cleland, Cleland has have mentioned that actual stories shown on air are changed from how they were originally presented, like in witness reports. And I find that, you know, I've heard 10 different versions of the the one where it drops slag down.
The one up in Canada.
Not Shag Harbor, but the earlier one in the 40s where why did I do that? At any rate, mentioned something I don't know the name of, but that early early sightings that basically the storylines have been changed, and that's really unfortunate. Yeah. So
And I always, after talking to both of those guys individually, I was like, I really want to see what happens if I bring them together, because they seem to have 2 sides to the card, you know?
Exactly. You know, and, you know, I feel very much a kinship with Gullius as far as, you know, things he talks about. And when I spoke about being challenged, Cleland really challenges me in unexpected ways. And I'm fascinated by the owl thing. As a matter of fact, I haven't gotten a chance yet. I think it'll be sometime next month, but I've got to order that book. I'm very curious about it, and I really want to read what he has to say. I think he's challenging in ways that are fresh,
yes.
You know, and new. And that's really, you know, I don't know that I'm going to land where I'm going to land with his ideas, but I think it'll be really interesting to explore them. You know.
Absolutely. And it's a well done book. It's just packed full of information and stories and stuff.
Yeah. You know, again, as your series went on, it just became more and more engrossing because as I've gotten older, I've dropped off on some of the readings and much of the stuff. And, you know, the information about David Jacobs and Whitley Strieber, it took me back and created a whole new avenue to kind of explore, you know, in my free time. And that was really, really rewarding. So thanks for that series. It's amazing.
Well, you're welcome.
Okay.
I'm quite happy with it too. Like it took off on its own and, it made me very happy.
You know, you've introduced me to, Micah Hanks, of course. Mm-hmm. He's somebody that I had heard a little bit about before, but now, you know, I'll go out of my way to listen when Micah's got something going on. Mm-hmm. And I find that I'm very interested in what he has to say. And I think he did a lot of really good work with Ghost Rockets.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was very interesting to me.
And I actually have Micah to thank a lot for the early days of the show. He helped me out a lot getting going.
That was my impression. He seems to be generous with sharing, you know, kind of getting started. I've heard other people say that also.
Yeah. All right. There. Well, let's get into movies. And the first one we're going to deal with is one I believe we both mutually love the series of, and that's the new Phantasm.
I do. I particularly love the first film. It really made an impression on me. I saw it. It was made in 79. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's directly between. I always think of it this way. It's directly between Halloween and Friday the 13th.
Hmm.
And that all three are kind of low budget. You know, Halloween was made for like $350,000. I think the first Friday the 13th was made for about $550,000. But what made Phantasm really stand out for me was that it wasn't in the slasher genre.
No.
Which had run through the 70s. We had all seen slasher movies in the 70s already. Halloween certainly reinvigorated it and changed it, but Phantasm was a wholly, I'm sure it's based on, certainly it has its, you can see Lovecraftian kind of echoes in it, but you know, it was such an original idea.
Yes.
That I'm captivated by it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and just the general feel of it was so different. And
Exactly. It was fragmented and dreamlike and weird. And it was, you had to take a huge leap a lot of times in watching it. And especially as the series went on, I think Don Coscarelli is the director, and he directed all except for the final installment, Ravager. Mm-hmm. And then he wrote them all. He had some co-writers along the way, but he dispensed with linear storytelling.
Yeah.
And in my young life, as a young teenager, that was the first time I experienced that. You know, like he did voiceover dialogue set against different action occurring. I'd never seen anything like that. I hadn't really watched a Robert Altman film or anything. You know, I was like, let's see, what was that? I was like 13, right? You know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was really challenging in a lot of ways. And then, of course, and I don't know how much you want to get into this, but the first film certainly is like a child or a relative child, a young person, dealing with not only the death of his parents, but then, you know, the death of his brother. And that, to me, resonated just because, you know, it was a young person who was more than just a murder victim. You know what I mean? Like a lot of young people are in films of that era. So,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, he was actually active in the story, in kind of determining his own story. And that was really cool. And all those things I found over time, you know, I watched it again after we talked on Facebook, and I still like it.
Yes. Yeah.
I still like it a lot.
And it's not even necessarily that it's a good movie. It's that it's unique. It gives you a different perspective on things. It's just not done like everything else that was done then.
Exactly. Now, were you a young person when you saw it yourself?
Fairly young, yeah.
Yeah. I think that when movies speak to us over time through our lives, it's less about how realistic they are and like special effects and things like that, because I think a teenager watching it today might laugh at some of the effects and
sure
and some of that stuff. But I think if they actually watched it, I think they too would. I really think they'd like it. I think it's a film that actually, you know, of the it was made for like $300,000 and it grossed $11 million, which is nice, but like Halloween grosses like, to, you know, just millions of dollars. I actually wrote it down somewhere. It's amazing. Yeah, Halloween grosses $47 million.
Wow.
You know, and but I think Phantasm, the fan base is probably smaller.
Yes.
And there's reasons we can I think there's reasons for that we can talk about as we go along, but just as ardent, and I think Phantasm had just as profound an impact on maybe young filmmakers and young film goers, you know, mm-hmm. like what they would look for, or what they would do, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, also Phantasm was far more challenging of a story than things like Halloween or
right.
Friday the 13th. I mean, because it really messed the whole thing with Phantasm is it messes with your concept of reality.
Exactly. And, you know, death is an outcome in those movies, and death in Phantasm is some kind of strange passage.
Yeah.
And something that's manipulated and exploited, and then and exploited by someone from another reality. And that is really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I think not just for kids, but or teenagers, but for adults. Absolutely. That I think that's the strength of the series as it goes forward, is that it really messes with reality, and it really sticks to the one thing that it sticks to maybe throughout the five films, is that commitment to not making reality easy for the viewer.
Yeah, yeah. Because you sit there not knowing what's real, what's really happening to them.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, Ravager, I'll be honest with you, I didn't love Ravager.
I didn't either.
Go ahead. You didn't either, but
I liked the second half of the movie a lot more than I liked the first half of the movie.
And why was that?
Because there was so much more going on. I mean, the first half of the movie can be defined as Reggie fights a bunch of balls on the highway.
Right.
And then about halfway through it starts, you start getting more of a warfare type of feel, where the tall man has destroyed part of the planet, and is this
right.
really happening, and is Reggie, you know, really crazy, and what's going on? It's like, okay, now you're getting into the more interesting what's really going on type of stuff.
Right. I mean, Reggie's in a hospital, and Reggie has dementia, and all of a sudden you're back to the first film, and Reggie was telling the young kid, I forget his name, but he's it's Mike, right? He's telling Mike, it's all right. It was a bad dream kind of thing, and your parents have died, and your brothers died, and this is your way of coping. And then in Ravager, you're propelled to this notion that Mike is looking out for Reggie, and the reality that we've been shown through the first four movies, what we think is reality, may in fact be in Reggie's demented mind. It's mm-hmm. his way of processing. And so you're down that kind of really interesting rabbit hole of not only reality but perception, and of course you have the ever present notion of dimensions and moving between dimensions, which I got to believe is something that you've liked.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
At one point I really liked slasher films, but after a while they lost their charm because
it was
so single, you know, it has a single thing to it. It's the guy trying to kill you. All right, great.
Right. Right. You nailed it right on the head. The thing is that it became a process rather than something new. Halloween was really scary and really well done. But when you do it over, well, they did it. I mean, what's really interesting is Phantasm starts in 79, and then Phantasm 2 isn't made again until 88.
Yeah.
Right. And it's the only one that was made with a production company, you know, and actually attached to a studio, I should say. And then, you know, you've got 94 and then 98 for the next two, and those were direct-to-video. In the meantime, Halloween is a franchise. It's steaming along, you know, grinding out remake after remake, save the really interesting Halloween 3, right? Really interesting movie. But,
yeah, yeah.
Season of the Witch.
Yes.
But so basically what you have is this incredible body count piling up as Michael Myers becomes bigger and bigger and more brutish and kind of just strange. And I love the first film. I love the second film and the third film.
Yes,
but after
so
that, you don't have to watch any more Halloween movies after that, maybe until Rob Zombie, you know, made his.
See, I didn't like that either.
I didn't. I'll be honest with you. I didn't either. First of all, it looks like it's shot in an algae fish tank. It was green and dark. I really didn't care for that. And, you know, I'm getting of an age where the hyper violence, I like you said, I've moved away from it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see something a little more artful, to be honest with you.
Or at least challenging.
Right, right, right.
And, like, Season of the Witch by, you know, the Halloween movie, a lot of people hated it, but I watched it and went, this was really interesting. I mean, it really shouldn't have been a Halloween movie, but the concept was fascinating.
You know, and you probably know this, but John Carpenter, his concept was, when they wrote Season of the Witch, was that Halloween would become a kind of anthology series where every year around Halloween, they'd release another story kind of under the Halloween title, but it would be a different story. Now, Mustafa Akkad was the producer on the first film and the second film and the third film. And he owned the franchise, essentially. And so after three came out and bombed, Mustafa Akkad said, that's it. No anthology. We're going back to, you know, we're going back to the serial killer walking alone.
I did not know that, but it explains a lot.
It does. It does. It's really unfortunate because Carpenter had some really good ideas, and it's sad to not see it go through. But of course he went on to do such, you know, The Thing, and you know, just a lot of great work in that 80s time period. So can't really be too sad about it, I don't think.
True. And with the new Phantasm, I mean, you can tell it's a lower budget. You can, you know.
Right.
There's something about newer equipment that when it's low budget, it just, it looks, I don't know.
Computer generated.
Yeah. But not just that. It's like the when you shoot with certain types of video cameras, it looks very amateurish.
Right.
You know, where film always has a certain look, no matter how cheap the cameras are, whereas video, it's almost like it's too clear, it's too...
Exactly. I don't think you can light around HD, Soraya. I think, I swear, I don't know this, I'm not a technician, but I think that with film, you could light things, and you could use darkness and shadows and get away with a lot more. Certainly they did in Halloween. It's a great example of a low budget film that used lighting, used the Panaglide film camera, you know. And now I think when you're shooting on HD, I think it's a lot more unforgiving, to be perfectly honest with you, because I notice that low budget films look much more low budget now than they did in 1965 or even 1985. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know. So I'm watching it going, okay, this is not quite what I expected. But like I said, about halfway through, I went from going, I'm a little disappointed, to then going, all right, now it's getting interesting. Took it long enough.
Exactly. And there's also, you kind of have to re-buy in, right? You have to you have to kind of find that place where Phantasm was for you. You know, you find that place, and then you kind of coast along with that and say, all right, I'm just going to let this take me on a ride. And you kind of drop the, I mean, we as human beings, we all look to make narrative as we witness things. And I think Phantasm, especially, you know, like 5, really prevents you from doing that. It's like every time narrative starts to formulate, you drop off and you're in another dimension or another perspective. Yeah. And so it's really challenging that way. You know, early on, a couple times, I'm like, wait, where are we? And then finally, you know, I finally said, you know what, I'm not going to worry about that. So it became much more enjoyable. I really enjoyed the last 30 minutes. Even like the last 20 minutes. I really did. I enjoyed it. I felt like they were trying really hard to
capture the
send it off.
Yeah.
And capture the friendship. And the bonds that these characters had. I did enjoy that.
I'm wondering if they're going to try and follow it up.
You know, here's something interesting that I have to admit. Okay. I am a commentary junkie, right? So I get the discs. I used to get the discs, and and listen to film commentary. It was like one of my favorite things to do. And I listened to Coscarelli a while back on his Phantasm on the disc that Anchor Bay put out of Phantasm. And what happened was early on after, okay, so 2 comes along and the studio decided that like they had to have some different stars and stuff. And that's when James LaGrosse played Michael. And I don't know if you remember that, but Michael was a different character or a different actor portrayed him, things like that. And I think Coscarelli had a terrible experience with that because New Line in the late 80s, early 90s was going around buying up a lot of the horror properties. Like they bought Friday the 13th for one thing. Yep. They also bought, Freddy.
What's Freddy? Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street. So New Line Cinema bought both of those. New Line approached Coscarelli and wanted to buy it. And he would have sold, from what he said on the commentary was, he would have sold if he could have continued the series. What New Line wanted to do was reboot it.
Yeah.
And he said no. Now, what, you know, I think maybe we're thinking the same thing. I'm watching 5 and I'm thinking, why don't they do TV with this?
Well, yeah.
Because TV gives you so you can breathe so much more into both character and story, right? I mean, and so what about reimagining Phantasm for TV? I think it would be interesting.
I do, yeah. No, I do. I mean, the problem, of course, would be replacing Angus Scrim with somebody who could carry that weight, you know?
Right. You'd have to go younger. Because, you know, I think if you reboot, you'd have to go younger to maybe appeal to younger. And I hate to sound like marketing in that, but I do think that's true. And you're absolutely right. He was the icon that was present through all 5 of those films.
Yeah.
And a big, I mean, he drew a lot of people. I mean, you know, a lot of people in their young teens had nightmares or near nightmares, I think. And, you know, I read somewhere that he might have been kind of the inspiration for Slender Man that shows up in the culture. And I didn't read all of it and you know, but I thought that was an interesting kind of concept, you know, that the film might have had that kind of quiet cultural impact.
Well, you know what? They should get they should reboot it for TV and get someone like The Undertaker from the WWE to play the role.
Right, exactly.
Big, tall, menacing guy who has a deep voice, you know.
Exactly. Maybe clean him up a little bit, shave him bald even or something.
Yeah. Oh, wow, that would be weird.
That would be weird. But or he could ponytail easily, right?
Yeah, sure.
So I mean, I agree with you. It could be someone like that because you're not talking about a range of dynamic,
acting,
dramatic acting necessary, right? You have to have menace.
Yes. And someone like that, even, I mean, he's obviously breaking down a little physically, but for an acting role where he really just, I mean, Angus was what, 82?
Oh, geez. You know, he died like months after
this got done. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like he held on until Ravager and then let go. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was true. You know, I really wouldn't. But,
And I had heard rumors that they were going to reboot it and do a new trilogy, and I'm thinking, you'll ruin it. You'll absolutely ruin it. It will not be the same feel or anything if you reboot this series.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if you almost have to take the series back. You know, the Bates – I'm not a huge fan of Bates Motel. Is it Bates Motel, the retelling of Psycho? I'm not a huge fan of it. You know, I think it's dragged too long, but – but I did like the reimagining and the shifting the time to when the characters were younger, you know, kind of seeing them evolve. I thought that was very inventive. And from a writing standpoint, certainly. Again, it didn't sustain my interest, but, you know, I think it was a really excellent try. You know what I mean? I thought it was very compelling at first, especially. So...
So let's move on to something else.
Sure. You mentioned it when we were getting ready, if there's anything that I watched recently.
Yes. Well, the one I just watched, I watched it last night actually, was Victor Frankenstein.
Okay, so is that the new one?
Yes.
Okay, I have not watched it, but I think I tried. I think I started it, and then I got called away to work or something. Mm. I definitely tried it.
It is basically a reimagining of the Frankenstein tale.
Okay. So and now, when's the setting of it?
1800s.
Oh, okay. So yeah. It's still a period piece.
Yes, it has the guy who played, I can't remember his name, was in Harry Potter, who played
Harry
Potter.
Oh, Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, I believe, let me double check that, but I'm pretty sure he was Igor. And it's...
You know what, I did watch part of this, and honestly, I did get called away. There was like something that I had to go cover on a moment's notice.
And they focus, like, the monster, the Frankenstein monster, only appears at the very end. It is almost, like, not that important to the whole story. The whole, like, the importance of the story is, you know, comes down to the what really makes someone a monster and, you know, can you create life and what does that mean in the grand picture, you know?
Right, right. Absolutely. So is it about the relationship between Victor Frankenstein and Igor, kind of, or?
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part.
Interesting.
Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe, and I just clicked on it and lost the other name, the main star. Daniel Radcliffe and James McAvoy is the other main star.
Oh, right, right. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm a big McAvoy fan, actually, and I'm getting to be a bigger Radcliffe fan. I have not seen all the Harry Potters, but he was in the... Go ahead.
I don't like Harry Potter, but I like everything else he's done.
Right. I just I'll be honest with you. I went to Harry Potter, the first one, you know, all those years ago. Mm-hmm. I went with a woman that really enjoyed, and I fell asleep. I did. 15 minutes in, I was done. And I never watched them after that.
I'm not a big fan of fantasy in general. And when magic is treated like that, it, you know,
right.
I'm kind of like, it's fine. I understand why people like it, and if I was 13, I probably would have liked
right.
it too, but I've learned so much in the meantime where it just seems kind of silly to me the way it's treated.
Right, exactly. Magic and witchcraft in film overall, that you could do a three-part show on that because especially witchcraft, the way witchcraft is treated in film, it borders on the ridiculous often. And magic is a little more interesting and a little more informed at times, but those films are very, very rare.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I can't really think of any off the top of my head. I know they're out there. I know they're out there.
But I mean, the Victor Frankenstein thing, I mean, it's obviously done with a decent budget. It definitely has the flash and the special effects. But at the same time, it was actually fun and has some depth to it. So, yeah, it was decent.
And it was
completely reimagined, you know.
He kills... So who gets killed at the end? They're in the castle?
Neither main character, although I don't want to give away too many spoilers.
Okay, yeah, sure, absolutely. I didn't even think of that. I apologize. For some reason, I think I may have been able to finish it. I'm going to go back and watch that just on your recommendation.
It has a lot, too. You know, there's a police officer who's very upset with the idea that he's trying to, you know, thwart God's will by creating life, and it has that sort of theological
right.
argument running through
it. He's a religious fanatic.
Yes, he's a religious fanatic, but he's also a very smart man.
Right.
You know, he's
intelligent,
he's a great detective, but he can't let go of that idea that, you know, you can't do this. You can't bring someone back from the dead, and Frankenstein is so, you know, atheistic and no, yes, we can. There is nothing after death, and if we can bring people back, that's the ultimate thing we can do. And,
right.
And you have Igor there who's kind of in between, not sure if this is right, but understands what Frankenstein is trying to do, and there's that moral dilemma.
And he's rescued Igor from a circus, am I correct?
Yes, that is how it starts.
I thought that was a fascinating opening to that film.
Yes.
I thought that was one of the most inventive reimaginings that I've ever seen. That was fresh, and that was interesting. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what was the one you just watched?
You know, I watched I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
I've never heard of this.
It is on Netflix. It's I believe a Netflix original, but don't quote me on that. And it is an old-fashioned ghost story. And it has maybe four, like, scares where you're going to jump.
Hmm.
The rest of the time builds with this kind of dread and this, it's not bloody. It's not completely explained necessarily, but, it is a really a great watch when you can devote 90 minutes to paying attention to something. And I don't say that flippantly or putting anyone down. I know how hard it is in life to have 90 minutes where you're also not working on the computer or, you know, whatever, multitask.
Right. Sure, sure.
But I had 90 minutes. I sat down, I watched it with a friend, and it just, it from the beginning to the end kept us in rapt attention. And that's an amazing thing. And so I don't want to give anything away, but...
yeah, I'm going to have to check this one out.
Yeah, it's a long title. And that's one of the reasons why I stopped on it, is I thought, wow, what a long title for a modern film. I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
And it is a Netflix original.
It is. Okay. Yeah, I thought I had that right. I was absolutely really impressed. And I like, again, you know, there's not a lot of good ghost movies out there, in my opinion.
I agree.
And so this was really refreshing. It was really something, nice. You know. Yeah. And I have nothing against kind of like the found footage. There's the one found footage one that ends. It's about the couple in their house. I don't know the titles. All these titles kind of sound the same. But a lot of the modern ghost stories are reliant on, you know, video camera footage and things like that.
And jump scares.
Exactly. this is not the case. You know what? I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in This House reminded me very much of the kind of mood that you found in the Japanese horror films, like Ring, and yeah. Where the interiors, you're very much in the interiors are very much confining, and you're, as the viewer, you're forced to be in them. There's very little respite from the rooms and inside, and I could see a lot of influence there. It's that same kind of claustrophobic dread. Very well done. Very well done.
All right. I watched one of the ones that Joshua and I talked about in the first episode of the movie podcast, Borgman.
Okay, what's that?
Okay, so this is from, I don't know what country it's from. I'm going to have to look it up. But it's a very strange and original movie about this guy who basically insinuates himself into these people's home and slowly drives them insane.
Wow.
And there are supernatural elements to it as well. The actual thing says, a vagrant enters the lives of an arrogant upper-class family, turning their lives into a psychological nightmare in the process.
Is it like Scandinavian? Is it Scandinavian? Or
yes.
Okay.
But I don't know. It doesn't say here which
which
country it's from.
Yeah. Huh.
But it is very original. It leaves you too. It's one of those movies where it ends and you go, I don't know what I just watched. Like it doesn't,
I like that.
It doesn't give you any answers.
Right. I like that. I am a lover of ambiguity.
And so. It is also, you know, the parts of it that are violent in such matter of fact ways. Like it's not glorifying the violence. It just happens.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, whoa, all right.
And is that on Netflix also?
Yes.
I will watch that tomorrow. That sounds fantastic.
And it's won 11 awards and has 19 nominations.
Wow. Jeez.
But, you know, it's one of those things people either love or hate. They either love it
right.
because it was so weird and so original and so different, or they hate it because they don't know what the hell they just watched.
Right. Yeah. There's no middle ground.
Yeah. Yeah, and
that's okay.
The other one I had just watched was an older one that Josh had mentioned, was The Man That Wasn't There.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yes.
And I had never seen it, and I thought it was done very, very well. And that's the Coen brothers, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. And there's just a random UFO in it.
You know, and you know they picked that iconography is picked up in the second season of the reimagining of Fargo.
Yep.
Do you watch it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the UFO does a little more in Fargo than it does in, absolutely. In this.
The man who wasn't there, it is completely, absolutely random and never pays off in any way. And it definitely pays off in the second season of Fargo. Absolutely.
And with it being in that movie, it's kind of like it's just one of those things that happens.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like the fish falling from the sky in films, right?
Yes, yes. Especially, what was the one? Magonia?
Or Magnolia.
Yeah.
And the kids sitting there in the darkened kitchen saying, this is something that happens.
Uh-huh.
Right? This is something that happens. And absolutely. I think you and I have very similar film tastes, actually.
Sounds like it.
At least thematic tastes, for definitely. No, the man who wasn't there surprised me. I originally watched it because I thought it was going to look great. I didn't know how much I'd like it, actually. You know, the cinematography is amazing in it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so that's kind of what attracted me to it. And then the rest was just because, you know, the Coen brothers at that time, right? I mean, you're talking about great movies, but you're also talking about like something like Unbearable Cruelty. Which is titled exactly what it is for the viewer, in my opinion. You know what I mean? It's exactly what it does to you as a viewer. So The Man Who Wasn't There, unfortunately, just never... I don't think enough people have seen it.
No, I'd never even heard of it.
I know. It's strange. But, that's a great movie. I'm glad you saw it. I remember that portion of the broadcast when you guys were talking about that.
Is there anything else you've seen as of late?
You know what I've just done is I just got done rewatching the first two seasons of Fargo.
Mm. Those were so good.
Yeah, and again, you know, we were talking about reimagining with Bates Hotel. I mean, there's something that reimagined and just really, it takes nothing away from the original film. You can still love the original film.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about it is that it exists in its own universe, and you can watch the first two seasons of this Fargo television series, and you catch the echoes. But if you don't catch the echoes, that's okay.
Yes.
You know, and again, like with the fish falling from the sky or the UFO thing, it may make you curious. It may not. Whatever it does, that's okay because it exists in its own kind of reimagined universe, and I liked that. Mm-hmm. I like that.
But it's a reimagined universe, but it dovetails with the actual movie. It doesn't replace the movie.
Exactly. And it dovetails in all these in ways big and small. So like, and it dovetails with a lot of other Coen films, right?
Yeah.
So if you're a Coen fan and you're paying close attention, you get these nice little surprises. And if you don't know there are other films, or if you don't know film in particular or whatever, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? You're still getting great story and great, a great experience from week to week or however you watch it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It might be, and I'm saying this off the cuff because there's plenty of examples now, but it might be the best reimagining that we've seen on television so far.
It could be.
But I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. I certainly... Television, how do you feel about television now as compared to movies now? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, movies, so many of them are remakes and sequels with not a ton of original content coming out. I mean, there's independent movies that are original, which is cool. But it seems like it's almost becoming like a golden age of television with some of the stuff coming out where it's a lot of really original, unique stuff. And even if it doesn't last... It's good while it lasts, you know?
Right. You know, I wrote an essay for the publishing group. I'm part of Gatehouse Media, right? And so I wrote this essay that we are living through the golden age of television, that starting with The Sopranos and kind of gaining steam as we've gone along through the two decades, right? I mean, The Sopranos starts in like 99. And it's like a harbinger of things to come. And I totally agree with you. I think it is the golden age of television. I think it's... storytelling, it's almost like the novelization of things. Each yeah. week or each episode is a chapter. And so much creativity. There's good writing. There's good filmmaking. And you're talking about some of the best actors we've got, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are doing these series. And we're attracting actors from England, certainly. You know, half the cast of The Wire is from England. So, or not half, but you know, a third of the main characters.
Right. And I believe The Walking Dead is the same way. A bunch of them are from England and such.
Absolutely, absolutely. How do you feel about The Walking Dead? Are you still with it?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I've never liked Rick as a character.
Right.
I've always thought he's the worst front person you would ever want in these situations. Like,
right.
Would just do repeatedly stupid things and somehow survive. And it's like, all right, you know, but I still like it. Fear the Walking Dead, I'm 50-50 on. I'm not really sure how I feel about that one. I mean, The Walking Dead, I haven't watched the most recent two episodes, but I still like it.
Right. What's your favorite TV right now? Or what are you going back to watch that you may have missed or whatever?
Well, let's see. The stuff I'm watching that I really like, I really like The 100, which surprised me.
Okay.
That was on CW. It's coming back in like 2 months for, I think, season 4.
I'm not familiar with that.
It is based on basically the first season is based on like 3 books that were more like teen-oriented books.
Okay.
And it's about these 100 kids who are sent, basically the Earth is nuked.
Okay.
And the only survivors are on these space stations, and they're running out of supplies and oxygen and all this. And so they send these 100 kids down to the planet to see if it's habitable.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And
okay.
It's still it still has people living on it that survived the nuclear Armageddon. So there's these tribal type of people, and it gets very dark and very deep. Like, I'm thinking, it's on the CW. It's not going to be very dark. It's probably going to be
right.
really stupid.
Right.
Instead, it's one of the darkest things on television.
No kidding.
I mean, people die in, like, every episode in horrible ways. And I'm just going, what? Huh. This just came out of nowhere.
Right, right. On the lightweight channel.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of a science fiction, post-apocalyptic kind of.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, great.
And as it goes, the second and third seasons get more into artificial intelligence and stuff like this, and it just gets really deep and down the rabbit hole after a while.
Interesting. All right.
Talking about things like Fargo, I absolutely love the redone version of 12 Monkeys on Sci-Fi.
You've mentioned that on other shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got it stashed away on Amazon. I'm going to watch it. I just haven't really gotten time.
Yeah, it's really good. I, of course, love Ash versus the Evil Dead. That's
okay,
a blast.
Yeah, yeah.
I found Blindspot pretty interesting. That's on one of the main networks, NBC or something.
I've heard other people whose opinions I respect say that that's a pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's
not, show.
It's not like, oh my God, this is amazing, but it is really good. I enjoyed Brain Dead. That's already been canceled. About a race of insects that come down from space and start eating
right.
politicians' brains.
Right, right.
And it's hilarious, and it's clever, and it's way too smart, I think, for the general television public.
Sure, so it gets canceled.
Yeah.
Channel
Zero, which is just finished the first season this week on Sci-Fi, is based on creepypasta stories.
Right, I've heard that. And okay, so I should watch that.
Yes, that was really, really good and really unique.
Okay.
And I think in January they're doing the second season because it was only 6 episodes. And I think the second story starts in January and is also 6 episodes.
Okay.
Let's see. The Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency is, I think, fantastic.
And that's actually a reboot of an... Did you know that was a series... in the early 90s or something.
Well, they did it. They did it maybe. Just a few years ago, like maybe 5 or 6 years ago. They did it.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They did a pilot. They did 3 episodes, and then there was some issue about who had the rights to it because it's whatchamacallit, who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Right.
What's his name? I'm completely blanking.
Douglas Adams.
Yes.
Ooh, jeez.
But So this is the next, you know, version of it, and I think they did a spectacular job with it.
I'm very interested in that. Very interested.
That's on BBC America.
Right, right. I get that.
Falling Water.
Jeez, I don't know that.
This is also, it's on one of the major networks, and it is about people who are connecting with each other in dreams.
Okay.
And there's other people trying to manipulate this dream world to cause real world effects.
Okay.
It is really weird. It is really deep, and I have no idea where it's going with it, but it's really good.
Kind of brings us back to Phantasm.
Yes.
Thematically.
Yeah. You know, you got one guy who's trying not to sleep because his dreams are so disturbing, and he starts getting some of these dream imagery in waking life. You know, and
do you know the story? I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do you know Wes Craven's original story behind Nightmare on Elm Street?
Yeah.
Yeah, about him noticing in the paper stories about young Asian men who were refusing to sleep, and then that's fascinating.
So Falling Water, again, that's a network show. I don't know which network it's on, but it's excellent. Another one on CW that's pretty good is Frequency, which is based off the movie back in the 90s.
Yeah, I've heard that that's really good.
It's. I wasn't sure if I was going to care, and I found myself, I recorded like maybe the first six or whatever and then watched them straight through and was like, yep, that's pretty good. It's about this girl who gets in contact with her father who died in 1996. And she can talk to him through a radio that got hit by lightning.
Okay.
And so she's changing the past by telling him things because he had died, and she gets in touch with him right before he dies. And so she changes the past, and her whole reality changes, and now she remembers two timelines.
Huh.
But it has other bad consequences, so she's trying to, you know, fix them as she's going.
Right. Playing catch up and be ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, have you seen the new Exorcist series? I've not watched it.
Yes, and I like that as well.
Because I'm a huge fan of Exorcist and Exorcist 3.
Okay.
You know, they Exorcist 3 was directed by Blatty, who wrote, obviously, the two novels, Exorcist and Legion. And Exorcist 3 has just been redone as a director's cut. Because Morgan Creek took the film from him, actually. And reshot the ending and introduced the character of Father Mourning. Now, from what I've heard, I've not had a chance because I'm going to have to go buy it, and I just haven't had the time. But what I've heard from trusted kind of sources is that the director's cut's not very good because the film was actually buried in the desert in a bunker.
Really?
Morgan Creek actually buried it in a bunker.
Huh.
So the existing film had to be reassembled from like videotaped portions and what they could save of the film, and so apparently it's not a real clean version. But I've been told worth seeing, so that's something that I'm looking forward to seeing. Exorcist 3, the director's cut.
Have you seen any of the series?
I have not. Should
okay.
I?
Yes.
I'm a huge fan.
The series is completely different from the movies.
In every way. Okay.
You know, you have, I mean, there are certain elements there that are present in the movies, but this is leading up to something where more and more people are becoming possessed, like something is trying to get into our reality.
Okay.
And of course, it has the Christian Catholic overtones because that's the style it's set in. So it's kind of as if all these demons are plotting behind the scenes and taking people over in order to break through and take over.
Okay. Because that was kind of a little bit introduced in the notion of Legion is that we are many, you know,
right.
the demonic forces. We are, you know, who are you? We're Legion. We are many, you know, the original biblical dialogue there. But that's interesting. So there's no Father Karras or Detective Kinderman or anything like that?
There are two priests.
Okay.
But I don't believe they're the same priests. I'm terrible with names.
That's okay. I understand. Believe me.
But one of them is a young priest who is kind of leaning, you know, away from the priesthood, but doesn't want to go away. And the other one is one who has been basically excommunicated because of exorcisms that have gone wrong in the past.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
So it has some of the feel there, some of the notions there, but it's very different from the from the movies.
What I've done is I've kind of let the episodes build up so I can watch. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So
I hate
being week to week. I have to hate that. So I'll let things build up, and that way I'm not waiting in between.
Right.
In between episodes.
Right. Other ones I really like. Mr. Robot is brilliant.
Yes, I would agree with you there. I mean, not that I've disagreed with you along the way, but I totally agree with you. I did not expect to like it. It's not something that I would normally be attracted to.
I was talked into it.
Go ahead.
I was just curious, you know, and then I was like, this is great.
Yeah. You know, I loved the first season of a different thing, but I loved the first season of Halt and Catch Fire. I didn't think that was anything that I was going to even be remotely interested in. I think Mr. Robot is much better. I just like it better. The science, I guess, would you say science fiction aspect?
Well, it's not really science fiction.
It's not. But
they use the narrative to really fuck with your head.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't know what's real because you're seeing everything through his eyes and he doesn't know what's real.
Exactly. Exactly. It sounds like a lot of what you're very interested in is about perception and reality and moving along non-linear kinds of dimensional kinds of issues.
Thinking outside the box.
Right. Why is that, you think? Is that a reflection of, as an observer of your show, I kind of see it as a reflection of your overall attitude.
I am somebody who, although, you know, I do like going back to things I enjoy, I need constant new stimuli.
Right.
And I can't, you know, I don't want to watch a show that's just like all the other shows I've seen. I want something new and different. I don't want to hear music that's just like the music I already like. I want to hear something new and different.
Right.
And right now I feel like there's a lot of stuff out there that qualifies. And it's almost more than I can keep up with, honestly. I have a few things I haven't watched because I just haven't had time.
Okay.
I watched some of Outcast. I think that's Showtime.
It is Showtime.
Yeah, and I really like that, but I haven't gotten that far into it. I'm maybe 3 or 4 episodes in.
I watched the first one and I liked it, and then I just haven't gone back to it. Not because of its shortcomings, just because of, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I just haven't gotten back to it. Yeah.
I've started recording Stan Against Evil, but I haven't watched it yet. It looked like it would be amusing. It looked like it had the sort of Ash versus the Evil Dead type of thing going on.
Did you see Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
I really hope the second one lives up to it.
There's a second one coming out. Yes. You're ahead of me on that.
Yep. They've been working on it, but they were looking for the right script, and I guess now production is underway.
Good deal.
I started watching Timeless, which I think is also NBC. I could be wrong on that. I know it's a major network. It's okay. It's about this guy who steals a time machine and is trying to unravel parts of history.
Right.
And they're supposed to go back and stop him, but it seems like he might actually be trying to do good rather than evil, and it's okay.
Yeah, I've heard mixed reviews so far.
You know, I'm hoping to watch Westworld sometime soon. I haven't had time to check that out yet.
It's interesting to me. I heard a review of Westworld from a person who's not familiar with either of the two films, Westworld or the follow-up to it, which I can't remember what it was called.
I'm not sure I've ever seen the follow-up.
The follow-up is Peter Fonda.
Huh.
Hamming his way through 90 minutes of, and you know, the cowboy Yul Brynner makes a brief appearance, but it's a thriller, conspiracy thriller. You know, they're attempting to cover up malfeasance at the different vacation sites, and they're in the space portion module. You know, but you don't really get it's more of a conspiracy film where, you know, you don't get the kind of action in the past like with Westworld in the film. So it's a different, Soraya, it's not very good, but it's one of those
question.
Yeah. It's one of those artifacts, right? You kind of watch it as the same way we look at old pottery, right? So that's, I've been doing a lot of that actually, going back and just watching. I'm gearing up to write something longer form, but I view the 70s and 80s horror films. They're starting to become these kind of artifacts the way the Universal films were for us as kids, right?
Sure, yeah.
And so kind of trying to rediscover these films primarily in the 70s and 80s. And some surprising stuff has jumped out at me. You know, I listened with fascination to your Stranger Things broadcast, and there's not a lot of film or television, no television obviously, made with that kind of vein of conspiracy, you know, the notion of remote viewing and experimentation, mind control kind of stuff. And I found some films in the '70s where that's a minor theme. Actually, I was surprised. And they're low budget horror films, but if we talk again sometime, maybe we'll talk about that or something. But you know, the Stranger Things was obviously like just blew a breath of fresh air across a lot of people's television landscape. I think a lot of people were enthralled by that. So, but that's what I've been doing, is kind of looking at older films.
With Stranger Things, you had elements of the familiar mixed with newer elements that weren't familiar. And I think that's what really set people into it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Certainly in the Asylum season of American Horror Story, there was an underpinning of like Nazi experimentation kind of deal. I don't know if you remember that.
Yep.
But it wasn't as and that was a well done season, but that wasn't a big plot point. Stranger Things was definitely just compelling and really interesting, you know, all the way through. I felt like, and I like how you described it, that kind of old ideas with new definitely drove it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you touched on it earlier. I think part of the reason we are in this really good era of television is because you can do that sort of chapterized serial thing without losing people. I mean, when Babylon 5 did it in the early 90s or mid 90s, you couldn't just say, well, I just started watching this, let me go download the first season or stream it on Netflix or whatever. You had no way to catch up.
Exactly.
You know, you had the beginning of the internet, and they actually had a cool thing when the show was running called The Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5, where he would recap every episode, and he would actually get the John Straczynski, the guy who wrote it, to leave comments on it. So you would get little comments about each episode and little tidbits behind the scenes type of stuff. And that was really cool. So every time I'd watch an episode, I'd go to the Lurker's Guide and see what he had down. And it was also a way that people could potentially, if they had access to the internet, go on there and maybe look at past episodes that they might have missed and get filled out. You know, like he would talk about all the cross connections and stuff that was going on. But that was so before its time. Because here was a show that was literally a serial series that was a story that changed as it went. And they were utilizing the internet to add to that story. And this was like 95, you know?
Wow. The things I learned. Geez, I had no idea that it was, you know, I have to admit, I'm not much of a space, you know, sci-fi guy. But that makes me want to go back and kind of look at it.
Babylon 5, although it was a space story, had two main elements to it. And I told this to a friend of mine maybe a year or so ago when he was thinking about watching it. On the one hand, it is very political. He takes a lot of stuff that happened like in World War II and applies it to this story. So like for one of the things that he talks about in the Lurker's Guide there, he was talking about how in World War II they had decoded the Nazi signals or whatever.
Right.
And they knew England was going to be attacked, and they had the choice of either telling the public so they could keep cover and alerting the Nazis to the fact that they had cracked their codes, or let them bomb the place and keep the secret, and they let them bomb the place. And they do something like that in Babylon 5, that same type of thing, where he's going, if I do this, it's gonna we could lose the whole war. You know, and he's like, you know, this is like the hardest decision I've ever had to make, because I'm going to be sacrificing lives, but it may win us the war and save people in the long run. But the other aspect is it's very Lovecraftian.
So, wow.
Yeah. So it takes these two seemingly incompatible things and mixes them together in this sci-fi sort of mix. But it starts off really hard to watch.
Really?
Yeah, it was 94 to 98 it ran. By the second season, it's really good. By the third and fourth season, it's hard to stop watching.
Wow. When you say the political stuff, it sounds like a kind of thematic forerunner of like the reboot of Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, but I think I was not a huge fan of the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, because they were too... I think they did too much of the political stuff and not enough sci-fi stuff for a sci-fi show.
Right.
And also they were doing things with current events. He didn't do things with current events. He did stuff
out of history.
Right.
Yeah.
Although he had things like Homeland Security and stuff going on that actually mimics stuff that happened more recently.
That's interesting.
Because, you know, history does repeat itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to change the current too much, but I oftentimes wonder, one of the strengths of television now is that you don't have to have resolved episodes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder about something like The X-Files, where things aren't resolved after every hour. Or a show, you've talked about this with Gullius on air, but Millennium, which was one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yep.
I wonder about that show, kind of recast... Not recap, but I oftentimes wonder if it didn't have to be resolved in 48 minutes or 54 minutes or whatever. You know, where those shows could have gone is what I wonder. Because I like that format where you have a continuing storyline.
Mm-hmm. So do I.
Continuing. Yeah.
And when Babylon 5 first came on, I was kind of like, you know, they were hinting at things. And I'm thinking... you know, shows do this all the time and then they never follow up on it, because every episode is self-contained and it always kind of has the same beginning end point in a sense. You know? And then with the second season of Babylon 5, the story starts changing dramatically and I'm going, what's happening? What am I watching? This is really awesome, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's early. That's early in television as far as doing unresolved storyline. That's interesting. It sounds like a little bit of a forerunner in a couple of ways.
Apparently, Straczynski wrote the story, what did he say, like a million years forwards and backwards?
Oh, wow.
And so, because it jumps around in time a little bit, like they actually move through time in one spot. And so he has like the whole history coming up and he has everything that happens after the series. And so it's a very well-formed universe.
Wow, that's interesting. I'm going to have to go back and look at that.
Yeah, like I said, the first season's a little hard. It has some gems of episodes, but they seem more standalone. But there's a lot of stuff like, if you watch the whole series and watch the first season again, you're going, yeah, I never noticed that the first time. Huh.
Okay.
There's all kinds of foreshadowing and stuff. It just doesn't seem like it really gets into its stride until the second season.
So it's paying off in very subtle ways that you don't even realize. That's interesting. That's really interesting.
And that's
great.
The initial pilot movie is almost unwatchable.
Okay.
It is not necessary to watch the initial pilot movie to get the series. They do refer to it a couple times, but it's one of those things like if you don't watch it, it's not going to destroy your enjoyment of the series.
All right, I got you. That sounds fantastic.
But they, you know, but I can't imagine how much better it would have done in today's world.
Right.
You know, where you could just go back and watch this stuff. And that's, I think, why so many of these series are taking this chance of running an arc story, because they can, because people can, you know, click on their DVR and download old episodes, or go on, you know, Pirate Bay if they have to and download old episodes or stream them on Netflix. It's available. It's possible now to do this and not, you know, not put people in a place where suddenly they're thrown into the middle of a story. Because in those situations back then, you didn't really grow an audience, because the audience didn't want to be dropped into the middle of the story and not know what's going on.
Exactly. You have the streaming alone. You know, you have Hulu, you have Amazon, you have Netflix, you have Vudu, even if you want to pay.
Right.
So, I mean, you can go back. The viewer's ability, it's like a library. Again, not to harp on the book, you know, kind of theme, but it's like it's a library.
Yes.
And so you can definitely go back and catch up.
Yep.
Or just go back for the pleasure of going back.
Yeah, I mean, the technology has offered us a lot of stuff, but I think what it's done is it's created the environment for better television.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Better storytelling.
Yes.
Better storytelling.
Deeper storytelling.
Yeah. You know, I look at everything through a writer's, you know, that's what I do every day, right? Is I write at least one story, right? And, you know, as a reporter, you love the opportunity to be able to carry things on, to follow a story. And when you see the versatility of television writers today within these stories, I find myself watching things that I never expected to watch. Some of the most pleasant surprises in my life as a viewer are things that caught me and I gave it a chance. And the writing is so good. Sons of Anarchy. Mm-hmm. I am not a motorcycle guy. I'm not a really, I just, that milieu, you know, I just not really attracted to stories. I thought, and I started watching it, and the writing just was really well done. And even when the story dragged or the violence, you know, got a little, I think, bloody, I was very interested in what was going to happen to those characters, and they moved along. And that's a great example. And that's why I give science fiction a chance now, to be perfectly honest with you, is that things can be so much more depth can be kind of breathed into stories and characters that, you know, it's worth it, you know, because you never know what you're going to find.
Well, that's how I felt about Jessica Jones. I'm not a big superhero person. I never even heard of Jessica Jones. And people
neither had
saying,
I.
People keep going, watch Jessica Jones, watch Jessica right. Jones. And finally, I'm like, fine, I'll watch Jessica Jones. And I was like, this is really freaking good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, I think the writing is, it was tremendous on that.
Yes.
I had to be dragged to American Horror Story. I have a friend, Sarah, she's a television, she watches television. Very similar taste to yours, but she had to drag me to it. Watch it. And even the first season, I didn't love it.
No.
I enjoyed it. But second, third, fourth season, I really, really enjoyed a lot.
The first season I liked until the end. And I feel like most of the seasons I felt that way about. Like, I enjoyed them, but then the endings were kind of like, that's it?
Oh, yeah.
All right. You know?
Yeah.
The last...
I didn't like five.
Which one was five? Was five Hotel?
Hotel, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, I'm not a Lady Gaga fan. She kind of drives me nuts, but I thought she did really well in the series.
Yeah,
she
did fine.
That did not hurt it for me. I just thought the story writing was sloppy, and it was just, it's almost like they didn't care. They were just going through the motions, and I'm like, wow, this was pretty bad. And the new one, I've only watched a few episodes, but it almost feels like they're just throwing too much stuff at you all at once.
Yeah, I haven't even embarked on six, to be honest with you. You know, what attracted me to five, I was excited because I heard that the writers were inspired by the Elisa Lam thing, which you've gone into with John Lorden.
Yep.
And I didn't really see any evidence of a creative departure from that at all.
No, not even slightly.
No.
That's why I was surprised when he said that. I'm thinking, it was? What part of that had anything to do with Elisa Lam?
Exactly. I don't know if that was a fake story that was put out there to just kind of piggyback on, you know, that meme that was floating around. I don't know what it was, but that was definitely not not anything remotely interesting.
Yeah.
Attached to that. So.
And like I said, you know, I totally expected not to like it because Lady Gaga was in it. And then I was like, nope, she's doing fine. It's the story that sucks.
Yeah, the story was really, really bad. I was shocked.
Her character, she did great with that character.
Yeah. Well, she's talented. I mean, I'm not a fan either. Like, I'm not going to listen or anything, but she's obviously talented. She's in that realm of talented performer, someone yeah. who's versatile and who can do things. And they're definitely out there, but yeah, I couldn't really get through it.
All right. Well, I think we should conclude this episode.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I really want to, I know it's kind of strange. I have people come at me, you know, out of the ether, but, thank you for giving me a chance. And, I just want to say, you know, I've turned a couple other people onto where does the road go or where did the road go? And, I just want to say that you're doing a lot of quality work and we appreciate it out here in the ether. You know what I'm saying?
Well, thank you. And I plan on having you back to do another one of these in a bit of time.
That's fine. I really, thanks. I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom. And to take you out tonight, since we were talking about Phantasm for so long, there's a band here that used to be called Rabid. They're now called Fatal Curse. They're a thrash band. And this is an older song of theirs about Phantasm called The Never Dead. We'll be right back.